Dennis Packham, Field 4. Based in Trincomalee.
Yes.
In Tripa, Ceylon, is it?
Ceylon, it was called then, yes.
What were you doing?
Well, we were part of a cruiser squadron in the Eastern Fleet, which had then some capital ships. There was the Repulse, Queen Elizabeth and Valiant, all under the command of Admiral Somerville. There was a couple of aircraft carriers, the Illustrious and the Formidable. And some of our duties were going out to attack Japanese-occupied islands in the Bay of Bengal, the Andaman and Nicobar Islands. And we either attacked them by means of aircraft or bombarding. So we had several duties of that to do, as well as some support to the 14th Army on the Burma coast, where they were engaged with the Japanese. Some troop convoys, which we picked up from Australia, from Fremantle, Australia, to bring back to Aden, mainly American troops. One of the American troops we took to Bombay. They were going to join up with a general known as Vinegar Stilwell, a well-known American general in North Burma. And I remember, and I was then, I'm talking about 1944, yes, I was then 20 years old. I remember looking at these young lads from America, they'd all got crew cuts, and thinking, what a dreadful thing for them to go to a place for them to... Those boys, I thought, because they were boys, 18, 19, but forgetting that I was 20 and I'd been through about several years of war already, it seemed dreadful for them to be going into what they were going into, because North Burma with the Japanese wasn't the best place to be going. And we had some drinks with them in Bombay before they departed. But I remember that very vividly, thinking how I was sorry for them. But I was only 20 years old myself, so anyway.
What were living conditions like in warmer climates?
Well, better, because it wasn't so wet and it was too hot sometimes. But mainly we were able to have camp beds instead of hammocks to sleep in, which were cooler. Very often slept on the upper deck, except in the monsoon seasons. Based in Trincomalee for long periods of time. Visited Colombo a couple of times for some recreational leave, as they called it, which I enjoyed. But the best times of all is when we used to do our refits down in Durban. For quite long periods at the time, we used to get leave where the South African people used to take us to their homes and look after us for a period of 10 days leave. And I went to Johannesburg twice on those occasions to a family and was really well looked after. I mean, the South African English-speaking people, yes, they were very friendly, but I'm afraid the Boers, the Dutch, weren't quite the same. But I enjoyed those times, and I was very well looked after. I had two marvellous leaves in Johannesburg. And I've always had a high regard for the South African people and the country. I know that lots of political things have gone on, but as a country, it's a beautiful country.
How did you spend your shore leave when you were in Trincomalee?
In Trincomalee, well, there again, we were... only allowed once in four, only part of a watch at the time. There was more recreation there. There were football pitches. There was a canteen for a drink, but again, only one bottle per man per night. Cinemas ashore, some old films being shown in some of the, well, not purpose-made cinemas, but something turned into a cinema. On one occasion, not Trincomalee, I remember calling the Maldives. And we were there overnight, and the RAF were actually occupying the place where they were using their flying boats from there. And they laid on a cinema show for us and some drinks at their canteen, and I enjoyed that. I distinctly remember going to the Maldives for that. Went to Mauritius Island a couple of more times. Went ashore there, but...
What do people get up to when... What do sailors get up to when they're ashore?
What do they get up to when they're ashore? Mostly drink. They seem to find the places where there's something to drink to get rid of their stress and everything else. Sightseeing. Some of these places are wonderful places to be in. in some cases looking for a girl.
Was there much of that?
Quite a bit, yes. But dare I say it, I think I was too young.
Were you given any warnings, or what was the Navy's policy on that sort of thing?
To take protection, to use protectives because of the diseases, which were rife, and lots of people caught them.
And so, did that actually cause a problem that you were aware of at the time?
Did it cause a problem?
Yeah, were you aware of members of the ship's company?
Oh yes, I knew people who had got the disease. Yeah. Being treated at the sick bay. Yes.
Was it? In any way, disciplinary or anything?
I believe it was. I believe there was some discipline attached to it. It wasn't rife. I only knew of a handful of people, personally, that had caught this disease in different places, either in Mauritius or Colombo or East Africa, any of these places where it was, you know, the disease was rife. And I do remember the, I think it was I was in the torpedo division, given a selection one night, and saying, for God's sake, if you must, wear one of these, you know, and be held up the necessary. But, as I say, I think I was probably too young to get involved too much.
How long were you out in the Far East?
How
long were you out in the Far East?
2.5 years. I must add to it that we visited Australia several times to pick up convoys and the like, and we also carried a big raid on Japanese island, occupied island of Java, as it was then, with a very large naval force. But for me personally, it was quite an experience because we went there the first time and I realised that my father had relations somewhere in West Australia. So I beat the sentry in some way because in a coded way, me and my father had got a thing which, if I mentioned football all the time, we was in a cold climate. If I mentioned cricket all the time, we was in a hot climate. And somehow I managed to slip in, could you give me the address of your Uncle Frank? And the post that came back eventually to Trincomalee, he gave me the address. They lived at a place called Spearwood, which was somewhere between Fremantle and Perth. In all, we went there 5 times. The first time I went out, looking for them, I went to a tourist place, but then under the military. And I said, this place, Spearwood, should be too difficult to find because it's off a road called Rockingham Road. Causing guffaws of laughter because Rockingham Road is 400 miles long, all the way out the western coast of Australia. Anyway, they told me where to get a bus, and I went out there, and I actually found my relatives. It was I'd never seen them before in my life, obviously, my great Uncle Frank and his family. Now, he was my father's uncle, although it was one of those situations where he was only about 8 or 9 years older than my father, so he wasn't an old man. And each time we went to Australia, I was allowed night leave and at one time weekend leave to go and stay with them because I had these relatives there. So that was quite an experience for me during that tour of duty.
You were away from home for a long time?
2.5 years that particular time, yes.
How did you feel about that?
You do get homesick, but I was still single. And I felt for the married men with families who were devastated at times by it. But it didn't worry me so much because I was a single man and I made the best of what opportunities we had of getting ashore and going to the places like Bombay. There were lots to see in these places, even though it was in the Navy. People pay thousands of pounds to go there now, don't they, in some of these exotic places. But, yeah, I enjoyed that part of it. The weather was kinder because it was tropical weather most of the time. But the time did drag on, and then eventually it was our turn to come home. We came back through the Suez Canal, stopped at Malta, Gibraltar, and a lovely feeling of coming home again.
When was that?
In July of 1945. We were still at war with Japan then, of course. The other war had finished.
Do you remember hearing the news that the war in Europe had finished?
Yes, I do.
How did you hear that news?
Well, we were very happy about it because we were out on operation in the Bay of Bengal, supporting the 14th Army in their run down to Rangoon and in action. And we heard about all the celebrations going on at home, and we didn't even get a bottle of beer out of it. So I remember not being very happy about it. We were glad it was all finished, of course, and especially for our family's benefit. But we seemed to be then, from then on, we called ourselves the Forgotten Navy, because people in this country, in Europe, as far as they were concerned, the war was all over and done with, and that was the end of it. But there was still a fairly horrific war going on out there. And with a very deadly enemy. And I remember when we came home, we came into Liverpool, and we were all asked if we would like to take a month's leave and rejoin the ship and go back out there again. Not one of us wanted, because we thought we got away with it for 2.5 years, we're not going back there and stick our necks out again, because there were some horrible goings on, not only in action, but in the Japanese prisoner of war camps and the like. But then the bomb was dropped, wasn't it, in August. That was about 3 weeks after I came home. And, of course, the Japanese capitulated, and so the war was at an end.
How much leave were you allowed after you returned home?
A month.
What was it like returning to the UK after so long abroad?
Strange. It took a bit of getting used to come back to the people who, where I lived in the village, not being unkind to them, but hardly knew there was a war on most of the time, except for their rationing. Okay, the aircraft, the bombers used to go over. They didn't used to drop bombs on the village. And so they weren't really in a war as such. And it was a job for me to, communicate with them about the real thing that was going on. Because it was something they'd never seen, and it was difficult to describe. But I was very obviously happy to be home. I met my prison wife on that leave.
The rest of your family, or your brothers and sisters, were they participating in the war?
They're all too young, except my sister, who was 3 years younger than me, joined the NAFI. And she was in places like France and Germany, working in the NAFI with the army. But my other two brothers were too young.
What about your father? Was he...
He just missed it by the fact that he was, I think, 41 or 40, so they stopped calling people up at 40. But he had to go and work in a munitions factory at Rochester, which on one occasion was very heavily bombed, and I know that he was very shook up by that. But no, he didn't go in the forces because he was that much over the top.
What about your mother? Did she?
My mother didn't go in the forces, no, but she used to go out doing them. The jobs I described earlier, cherry picking, hop picking, buying the food, earning money to put shoes on her feet to go back to school and that sort of thing. And then, of course, she's had the rest of the family to bring up through the war, which must have been difficult, although in the country they did have their own gardens, and so vegetables was there. My father kept chickens, so they had eggs, which was a luxury during the war. By and large, they didn't get away with it too badly. But they were always worried about me, of course.
Had you managed to keep in contact with him while you were away?
Yes, by letter again and photographed.
I think you said obviously you got the address from of your uncle, great uncle.
Yes.
What did you do once your leave had finished?
Back in this country? I think I had to rejoin Chatham Barracks, where I was in for a little while, and then I started going on courses down in Portsmouth. First of all, a torpedo and mining course, and then a long electrical course at Fareham. So I was away from, because George and I got married in December. We were going to get married in Easter, but decided, as I was drafted, in fact I was drafted, I beg your pardon, before the course I was drafted to a destroyer called the Zephyr, in Kiel Canal in Germany, where I spent some time. So when we knew this was coming up, we decided to get married. And I spent a little time in Germany. This is right in back end of 40, well, beginning of 46, really.
So this is only the second ship you've been on?
That was the second ship I've been on, yes.
It must have been very different being on a destroyer.
Absolutely, absolutely different. Yeah, a much smaller ship. The catering was different. We had what they called
canteen,
you know, where we provided our own, cooked our own food. And you know, it was all right because we could choose what we wanted within the within limits. A much smaller ship to live in. Still carried out doing electrical work in it, of course. Spent about 18 months in the Zephyr and went to escorted the King George V in the Vanguard to Cape Town. Was one of our duties when the royal family went out to Cape Town. And I can't remember the date. It was either 47. I think it was 1947.
I think it was 48.
Was it 48?
Sorry, if I could be wrong.
Well, yeah, you're probably right. Around about that time. And that was quite a horrific journey because we got caught in a terrible storm in the Bay of Biscay. And the destroyers were all hove to, so to speak, where we had to turn and face the gales and not move. Well, of course, a Vanguard, a bigger ship, was able to carry on. And we also called in the island of St. Helena on our way down, which was quite a thing because not many ships go there, not even now, I don't think. And we went down to Cape Town again, and I remember going around to East London for a spell while they were doing their tour of duty. And we're very well looked after by the South African people again.
Must be very different being in the Navy in peacetime.
Much different, yes. Much different. I got used to the wartime Navy because that's the Navy I joined. Although, as I said before, I was despondent about all the things that happened. And getting to a peacetime Navy was something quite different. Drills and lots of parades and all sorts of disciplines coming in that... couldn't happen during the war for obvious reasons. Yes, I spent 18 months in the Zephyr. That was one of the events, going to South Africa with her. Went to Gibraltar, Mediterranean. Left the Zephyr, joined another destroyer called the Jutland.
What was it like now that you were married? It must have been
terrible.
Very different.
Terrible. This is what put me... I'm afraid this is what decided me that the Navy wasn't for me. Because... I was married, and after about 18 months, we had our first child, and we were both very... I was very homesick, and they were very upset when I left home. But it had to go on. I couldn't... You know, I'd signed on for those years, and I had to carry on.
So you'd signed on for 12 years?
12 years, yeah.
Plus your 2 years as a boy.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Was there no possibility of... buying out, or
some people mentioned it, but I don't think there was in those days. I'd never heard of anybody doing it. The only people that got out of the Navy they got out of ill health or something like that. And strange to say, some people even wished it upon themselves that they could get out by that means. But no, we carried on, and there was heartaches because I did have to go another 2.5 year tour of the Far East later on in my career to join a minesweeper at Singapore, and so I was 2.5 years away from my family.
They weren't given the option of married quarters?
Not in those days. This was 1950. The Korean War just started. That's why we were out there.
So you were on HMS Jutland. This will take you into what, 49?
49, about 49. For about the same period that I did in the Zephyr, yes. And we went on different Mediterranean cruises, they used to call them. But we got caught up in one of the Egyptian-Israeli wars. And we were down at a place called Aqaba for a while, supporting a battalion of British troops who were occupying that place in Jordan at the time because the Egyptians and the Israelis were at it. So we spent about 6 months away then, at that particular time, and came back and had some more leave, and then I got into cricket because I used to play for North Command, and my wife was a cricket enthusiast. She always used to come with me. And for all that season, and I think it must be 1950, I played for North Command, and played a lot of cricket. Then I got my marching orders in September of that year to go to Singapore.
What rank did you hold, by the way?
I was an LEM, or a leading torpedo operator at the time. I didn't do myself justice because, quite honestly, I had the background to go on and on, but as I said, I became despondent over the Navy as it was in the war, and the conditions, and secondly, through married life. It was no place for married people to be in.
So you sent out to the Far East?
Yes.
Without your family?
Yes. I went out on an aircraft carrier Ocean. The aircraft carrier Ocean was, so I took passage on it to join the Jasur, the squadron leader of the minesweeping squadron in Singapore.
And what was like as part of a minesweeping squadron? Were you out on patrol for several days?
We did very little minesweeping as such. Our main job, because it was during the Malayan emergency, was to patrol the east and west coast, especially the east coast of Malaya, against gun runners and support the army that was at war with like a guerrilla situation in Malaya at the time. So we were more likely to use our guns than our minesweeping equipment. And they were our jobs. Again, pretty boring. But once again, I must come back to my favourite sport, cricket. I qualified to play for the Royal Navy team when I was out there. And that took a lot of my part of the spare time up, playing cricket either in Singapore or in Hong Kong. And I don't know whether the captain did it deliberately, but we used to leave Singapore at the end of the cricket season in Singapore and arrive in Hong Kong at the beginning of their cricket season. So it was around the clock. And he was a cricket enthusiast, Captain Bone. He used to come and watch us from time to time. And so, I don't say he did this deliberately, but it just worked out like that.
Can you describe life as part of his minesweeping squadron?
Well, pretty cramped. I mean, the minesweeper was only 900 tonnes, quite a small ship, to ones I've been used to being on. Canteen missing again, they provided round food. Used to go ashore to Singapore from time to time, to the Union Jack Club and play tombola. Play cricket a lot. Conditions were pretty hard on the minesweeper itself. It's a cramped conditions. Slept on a camp bed. Had a small mess. I've got a picture of our mess over there, where my wife sent me out a Christmas cake one Christmas time when we was out there. Filled up with brandy to keep it going.
How long would you be out on patrol?
Sometimes for about 3 weeks. Then back in Singapore for a while. When we went to Hong Kong, we were in Hong Kong most of the time. We didn't go out very much. Went to other places, such as Bangkok. We had several trips to Bangkok. Saigon, as it was then, which I believe is Ho Chi Minh City now, in Vietnam, but it was Indochina in those days. More to show the flag than anything else. The French were out there in charge of the Indochina situation, and the Siamese, I think they were called, entertained us quite well when we went to Bangkok.
Did you get involved in the Korean War?
Not in the Korean War directly, no. We were based mainly in Singapore in the Malayan emergency. So.
And did you intercept many gun running?
Quite a lot. Well, they were mostly junks, Chinese junks. And they were trying to smuggle arms down to the people who were carrying out this war. I used to feel sorry because most of the junk crew were as many women as were men. And we send these hunky great sailors aboard with submachine guns, and they were very frightened, obviously, to search their boat. And if we found contraband, we found the missions, we had to hand them over to the Singapore police or Malayan police, and they came out in the boat and they took them off. And what happened to them after that, I don't know.
Did you ever have any resistance from any of these vessels?
No, I don't think they could, because we had not only a 4-inch gun, we had two Oerlikon cannon, 20mm cannons, which were trained on them, and they'd have been blown out of the water if they'd tried anything.
What were your particular duties on board the minesweeper?
I used to do sometimes I was in the minesweeper end where I used to man the, we had two generators. We used to have double L sweep, as it was called. It was like two long cables that were sent out behind, I don't know if you've heard of this, behind us. And pulses were pumped in one way and then the other, and they were there to explode magnetic mines. We also had a hammer on one side and another gadget on the other side that sent out pulses, as well as the power vanes with the wire sweeps. So most of my work, if we were sort of closed up for that sort of thing, was to man in these generators in very hot conditions, because they used to go work one way in one direction and then the other to send the different pulses out. But my main job on that ship, I was in charge of the low power system in the ship and in charge of the low power room. So a low power presented any lighting, etc., that would take over as soon as we were hit or damaged and the mains went. And I used to start the gyro up before we went to sea, about 4 hours before we went, to get the gyro motor going. And mainly all electrical work, yes.
Anything else you remember about that time?
It's a long time, isn't it, to be out there and to remember so little about it. I've got a one-track mind. When I ever talk to people about me being there, I was always playing cricket somewhere. And I did play a lot of cricket, both in the island of Singapore, Malaya, Hong Kong. I met up with quite a few celebrities in cricket.
Such as?
Well, I don't suppose you'll know, a chap called Noel Arthey, who was the professional for the Hong Kong Scorpions Cricket Club, and he used to play for Queensland in Australia. One or two others that played better cricket than I could, or I can't remember the names of, but it was good recreation for me and occupation for me, because it became part of my life out there.